Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel with you on the Thursday. It is draft night, and as we speak, of course, nothing's happened much, but Tom Leach is in the studio with us. There is still a draft.
There was one?
You're eligible.
That's from Stripes.
Yes, I know. Now I've lost my train of thought.
I diverted you from Stripes.
That's right. I'll make an edit. You know, I always take pride in the fact that Warren Oates was a Kentucky boy.
I did not know that. I knew they shot some of the movie in Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was from somewhere in Kentucky, so we'll find that out.
Hulkaburger.
Yeah, exactly. We've all spent so much time talking about the draft and all that stuff, but you had an interesting guest on the other day on your show about minutes returning to teams, and that has become, I hate to use the word metric, but it's really common sense, though. Now Kentucky has more minutes returning than it had certainly last year. And I think common sense tells you if you have quality experience coming back, you get a real shot.
It's an article that John Gassaway had done at ESPN, and it was on the concept of what he termed talent sequencing, which is interesting theory. The idea, or not a theory, but a concept, to try to, or the point being that the best teams at Kentucky have been the team, and he talked about Duke too, have been when there was some carryover. You didn't have to have a bunch of seniors, but you had to have some carryover, and he came up with a metric with a term called possession minutes, and you can Google the story and see exactly what that means. But Kentucky returns higher than what the threshold he determined was to be able to get a one seed was what the correlation was he was using. That's usually the one of the best paths to have a shot to get to a Final Four. And Kentucky has, I think he said, about 48% of its possession minutes coming back with PJ and Quade and Nick and Brad, so they have more experience than Cal's had for the last couple of years back, and those have been his best team.
Oh yeah,
he's had some carryover.
Yeah, which people have to remember this, and I really thought that, and I'm not knocking the guy. Certainly, Billy Donovan is a marvelous coach, but I actually think Billy's teams, and it made sense the guys that he recruited and he signed, but it was almost as though they were putting together like a fantasy team. And it's great to get the best players who are out there, but you got to fill needs. And last year Kentucky's great need was outside shooting, and with Baker hurt, they were at a real, and with Quade Green hurt a lot. So now with the incoming freshmen and with the returners, this should be a team that can knock down threes quite a bit.
Yeah, they should be able to check most of the boxes, if not all, that they'll need to check to be a legit title contender and not just a hopeful contender. I think just about everyone at Calipari's teams has at least had a hope that was legitimate, but to be a serious title threat, this should be a team that does. And it's a difficult target to hit. Kay and Cal, they get paid well to try to hit it, but and it's equally, I think, tough for teams that try to do it with veterans, because if it's not like you're going to keep the best players around for three or four years. So if you've got guys for 3 or 4 years, they weren't the best players.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully they've developed. But the point is, it's whichever way you do it, it is a difficult target to hit with so much turnover now. I've told Calipari before, he's like a derby trainer in that you get essentially one shot with every team, and they've got to hit on the right time in the middle of March, in his case, or the first Saturday in May for Baffert. And so that's – What makes the challenge difficult, but they've got a good number of returning guys to give them some just a little bit of veteran leadership, at least guys that have been through the practices and can help the new guys understand. And, the 2014 team found its way to the national championship game, but it was not a pretty path at times. And so the prettiest paths have been with some experience, and they'll have some of that.
And, the younger teams are force-fed experience, like this team that lost four straight last year. This 2014 team, I think, had the five road losses in conference play, but ultimately they learned their lesson.
Those guys, you know, PJ, Quade, et cetera, the guys were on that team and went through that. That's now going to be valuable experience for them to pass on to the new guys when invariably you hit a rough patch.
And the 2012 team had that rough patch in Bloomington, but that was it. And that's all they needed. Let me shift you over to, as we talked to the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach, let me shift you over to football. And it's been, unfortunately for Mark Stoops and his staff, a little bit of a newsy summer. You know, you've had a lot of coaches, as I have, say they want their summers to be boring. They don't want any headlines or whatever. And they've had a couple here, first losing Denzel Ware and then losing Jamarcus Walker. And one was obviously a proven SEC player who very likely will be drafted. And the other was an up-and-comer who showed a lot of promise and showed why he was a four-star athlete. What kind of a setback is this for this defense?
The Ware's the bigger one because he's a guy who had produced and he had made some big plays. You know, sometimes guys have a knack for being around the ball. He had a big play in the Southern Miss win last year. It was one of his covering a fumble, I think.
Yep.
He had the recovered fumble. He ran back for 2 points down in South Carolina a few years ago. So he was a guy that was just kind of found his way to be around the football. So that's a commodity that is not easily replaced. The good thing is now, though, they've recruited well enough that they have some guys that you could turn to. Boogie Watson probably at the top of the list that has done some things. Last year was pressed into service down at South Carolina, had a big stop.
Big stop.
Previous spring game really looked good when somebody else was hurt and he got a lot of extra snaps. So a guy that has maybe been waiting for his opportunity, here it is. Now can he take advantage of it? As opposed to you lose a guy like Ware and then you're like, well, there's this guy and this guy, and I think one of them can do it. I think you have as a coach, you probably have a little more confidence and trust in a Watson. And then you bring in some young guys behind that can hopefully push him. So you lose certainly some depth there, but I think that's certainly the biggest loss. I think what will make life a lot easier for him to be able to step into that slot is if Josh Allen's having the kind of year that we expect and is commanding more attention on the other side, if Pascal or Bohannon or some of those guys up front are commanding more attention, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody's over there at that other outside linebacker position not getting as much attention, and they've got the athleticism to then make plays and take advantage of that.
Jen Smith had a piece recently in the Herald Leader about the fact that, and I had read this, but you know, you kind of shuffle it to the back of your mind, that this team had dropped in a roundabout sense from 5th to 13th defensively in the SEC. And then when you think back last year, and boy, you and Jeff and I have talked so much about it on the air, how close this team was to winning 10 games. That's remarkable, with a defense that was just riddled by passing attacks. And
didn't have a great pass rush.
No. I mean, and I guess that's my question is, you know, looking back on it, I was confident that at the very least they'd put pressure on a quarterback and they had defensive backs who knew what to do with rushed passes. But can you put your finger on anything? Obviously, you know, pressuring the quarterback was a problem, but I, for the life of me, I can't figure out where it went south.
I think it started a lot with the defensive line. You remember they lost some guys there off the bowl team from the year before.
Yeah.
Alvante Bell.
Yeah.
That had a good game and was expected back. You know, they didn't get the hoped for development out of Matt Elam. Adrian Middleton, who had finished strong in the Louisville game and in the bowl game down in Jacksonville, and had an okay last year, but didn't really maybe take the step that you wanted. So just nobody up front was really disruptive. And the stat that I will look at, the more and more I think of it this day, especially for college football, it's, you know, it's hard. If you hold somebody, if you average holding a team to 24 points a game, hold your opponents, you've probably had a good year.
Yeah.
For most defenses. So don't look at points per game or totaled yards. I think especially for Kentucky, the two things that if they're three really, but it's almost a 1-1A, sacks and tackles for loss, and really probably even more tackles for loss. Are you disruptive? Are you getting penetration? Are you getting the other team in second and third and longs? that's where that veteran secondary then gets to take more advantage of the situation. And then the other one is forcing turnovers. And Kentucky with Steven Johnson in the last couple of years did a really good job of minimizing turnovers. I think they can improve in terms of getting them and getting the takeaways. And if they can do that, and I think the disruption up front, the more TFLs and sacks will lead to the more turnovers, that's where I think the defense has a chance to be better. And I don't think dominant. They're not, you know, until you get – you think back to the best defense, I think, in the last long stretretch you and I have been around this, is that 08 group. You had three NFL out of the four defensive linemen, three guys that played in the NFL.
That's right.
Byron Pryor, Corey Peters, Jeremy Jarman. So when you've got that, that's when you've got the makings of a really good defense.
And unfortunately, of course, that was a year after Andre Ware left and Kenan Burton.
Yeah.
Couldn't get synced up.
If they could, they're moving in a direction. If they, I don't know that happens this year, but maybe they're starting to move there to where it could hit. Now, unfortunately, probably, you know, next year, if you know, Pascal with a second year in the D-line, Bohanna with a third year, if you get that, you've probably lost Benny Snell, but at least maybe you've got a second-year quarterback and, you know, et cetera.
I remember somebody in a news conference about midway through that 08 season when the defense was really getting it done, and somebody mentioned that to Rich Brooks, pointed out that he said, you know, and said something to him like, you know, do you ever think about that or whatever? And he gets that wistful look in his face. He's like, oh, yeah. You know? But, you know, at a Kentucky, you know, it's load and fall back kind
of
thing.
And
if you build your recruiting, you don't fall back. When you fall back, you're still in a bowl game.
That's kind of why we were talking about, you know, we were talking about with the basketball thing earlier, that with so much turnover, it's a hard target to hit to be, you know, get that championship, you'd be a contender year in, a legit contender year in and year out. You know, with football, it's easier said than done for the Kentuckys and the programs trying to make the move up in the league like the SEC to hit on both sides at the same time. You know, Alabama does that pretty regularly, but you know, it's a struggle to get there.
The latest odds I saw, and everybody's got odds, but one of the Vegas Twitter accounts had Alabama a 5-11 shot at making the playoffs. I mean,
pretty likely.
Have you ever seen a horse go off? Well, it's 1-2 basically. So but I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't waste your money. Anyhow, you talked about Steven Johnson, and I've been working on a project with UK Sports Video about Steven, and you know, you start remembering what he meant to this team and some of the things, some of the plays he made. And you remember one, and then that gives way to another one and another one and another one. And it's easy to see why this team rallied around him. I believe if Drew Barker stays healthy, he racks up some pretty good numbers. I don't know how many games they win. Maybe they win the same. Maybe they win more. I don't know. But the bottom line was Steven Johnson was forced into action. And I remember when Drew Barker went down. Here's a little inside baseball for you folks. During a commercial break, you and Jeff and I were moaning. I mean, we were like, oh, my gosh, you know. And I think I asked you, Tom, have you seen this guy in practice and that kind of stuff? And you said, yeah, you know, he's not bad. But I don't know anybody who thought this kid's going to get it done.
Yeah, and he found a way to make plays.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guy that, you know, you didn't – worry about completion percentages or any of those stats when there was a late drive to be made. He found a way to make the plays. Just look at the bowl game last year that they won.
Oh, man.
Where, you know, as we know now in retrospect, he was as, you know, as beat up as a boxer.
Yep.
And he found a way to run or, you know, make the throw that kept the drive going, that made the play. You know, even the long lamented Florida game. He got him in position on that last drive.
Yeah.
If they don't get the holding penalty, they probably pull that out.
Yep.
With some throws and, you know, clutch plays that he made. So that's replacing that's easier said than done. This Mark Story recently did an article about the mystery at quarterback because you've got just no carryover. You got nothing back. Nobody's thrown a pass in a college game that is in the quarterback room for Kentucky. And last time I was looking, I'm working on an article for the UK Network preseason yearbook, and I sent a note over to UK to check my math or check my facts on this. I think Jared Lorenzen's the last time that happened, where you started the season and because Dusty had transferred out.
Yeah.
You didn't have anybody in the quarterback room who had ever thrown a pass. Jared had been redshirted, but had nobody thrown a pass in a college game.
I think you're right. Tom Leach is here. We'll be back with more 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel with you on a Thursday edition of our show. We're talking football with Tom Leach, the radio voice of the Wildcats. And when we left off, we were talking about quarterbacks. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine. You've got the new hotness coming in. You know, you've got the transfer and touchdown Terry Wilson. You've got the guy who knows the offense inside and out, Gunnar Hoke. I don't know how much the game has slowed for him, because he does know the offense. He's played in a couple of spring games, but he's never had, you know, the live shells whizzing around his ears. But it's not an easy decision for this coaching staff, of course, unless the decision, unless the decision is so obvious. If one of the kids forces their hand, obviously that's the best scenario. But I don't know if that happens.
No, and it may have to play itself out within the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they would ideally not have to do it that way. You would hope somebody would separate himself, but Gunner's been around. He's been in the quarterback room for a few years now, so he's got some level of experience. Danny Clark to a lesser degree, and then you've got Wilson, who comes in and is dynamic with his speed, but you have a team that's going to be, I think, certainly built around Benny Snell, and you have a great asset there. You've got an NFL caliber tight end in CJ Conrad. So you've got a couple of good quarterback friends to help ease a quarterback in. They always the NFL say the great running game's the quarterback's best friend. So Kentucky has that. They've got veteran offensive line, got that tight end as a safety valve. So you've got a lot of things in place that can help a new guy that ease into the position. So I think first and foremost, because of those assets around him, and you've got veterans on defense, you want the guy who's going to minimize mistakes. That's turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
That's
take care
reads,
of the ball. Yep.
Because we've got Benny Snell, so let's not screw this up.
Yeah.
And so who does the best job of that? You know, somebody may be able to give you the flashy home run play, but I think for this quarterback position, you want to make sure the guy also doesn't strike out a lot. He's got to be a home run hitter who makes contact.
And you remember Steven had a problem with that early in his career. You know, he kept getting the ball knocked out of his hand, and he would throw some picks.
How many times did he miss the easy throw to CJ Conrad?
Oh, yeah. You know, and he also, and you and Jeff had a good look at that from upstairs. He would make a mistake on the in his decisions in the run-pass option. So now you got to start over with all that. You know,
so who does the best job of making those decisions and minimizing the turnovers?
Exactly.
I think that's the guy probably you're looking for. And if that can be Terry Wilson, and you can also get the dynamic speed that he brings to the position, you know, fantastic.
In his interview for this project, Steven pointed out that I had almost forgotten about this. He threw a pick six late in the game against Northwestern, but they turned around and marched it down the field because he said we had that blue collar mentality, and I think a lot of that was him rallying around him. That's a great intangible.
Coaches always talk about this, especially with cornerbacks, probably as much as any position.
Yeah.
You got to have a short memory.
Oh, yeah.
Steven was that kind of guy.
What does everybody else?
That's exactly right. It's one thing to say that or talk about that. It's quite another to live it.
Yep. Tom Leach, the voice of the Wildcats. You hear him each and every morning on this very radio station on the Leach Report. And are you getting any time? Oh, you got your baseball trip coming up.
Yep, going to Minneapolis, and then we'll take a little – it's first weekend in July, and we'll take a little vacation in the middle part of July, and then come back, and by that time it'll be just about the start of football practice.
And you've not been to this ballpark yet?
Nope, I've not been to Target Field.
All right.
I hear great things about it. The Reds were up there earlier this year, so I know Marty was saying wonderful things about it, so looking forward to it.
If it's as impressive as the airport in Minneapolis – which I've been in. I've not been in the ballpark. You will love it. Thank you, sir.
Looking forward to it.
Have a great summer.
Thanks.
And back in just a minute, 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch, and our thanks to everybody at the Children's Charity Golf Tournament for helping us with the remote portion of our program. Curtis and I back in the studio now. And, of course, this is NBA draft night. And we talked a lot, Curtis, obviously, about the Kentucky players. And in our conversations over the last few weeks, we've made reference to, directly and indirectly, the overall strength of the SEC and how much better it seemed to have gotten. And I think at the NCAA tournament bore that out. And now I think that the fact that you've got these talented players, not only from Kentucky, but from other SEC schools, who are at least going to be drafted tonight or at least signed free agent contracts, that's kind of the proof in the pudding, isn't it? I mean, if they're taking their team to postseason play and then professional teams are interested, it's obviously a sure sign that the talent level is rising in the league.
Yeah, without a doubt. And probably the irony of ironies in this whole discussion is the guy that's potentially going to go first off the board from the SEC played a grand total of one SEC tournament game in Michael Porter Jr. But if his health checks out, I'm guessing an NBA team will take a chance on him. But, you know, besides him, you got Colin Sexton at Alabama and Robert Williams. Those guys, in addition to Gilgeous Alexander and Kevin Knox, are all going to be first-round picks. It's almost guaranteed.
If not lottery.
Yeah, all of those guys have a chance to be lottery, and I think it's constantly changing and with new intel. And the latest before the draft today from ESPN, I don't know if you had a chance to see it yet, but Gilgeous Alexander to sixth.
Whoa.
Yeah, and partially because there's going to be some trades and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But someone just is going to is apparently falling in love with him and going to take him that high. So what all these, as you mentioned there, these all guys are potential lottery picks. I doubt they probably all will get drafted before the 20th pick. So they're all pretty similar. So I tried to sketch out a list who's going to have the best NBA career, you know, out of these five first-round SEC picks. And it's really interesting, and I mean, there's super tough calls. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. has the most talent, and if he can stay healthy, he has the potential to be an all-star just from what he was able to do. I mean, you look at him, he's so big, so talented, can shoot. He's somewhere between he's probably a less skilled Kevin Durant at his best, which is still an amazing basketball player. He's been on record saying he thinks he's the best player in the draft. And going into the year, if people recall back, it was actually the discussion was who's going to be drafted first, him or Marvin Bagley.
Right, exactly.
And then DeAndre Ayton shot up and people, you know, what he was able to do at Arizona.
And, not to interrupt you, but had they come out of high school into the NBA, most people thought Porter would go first.
Yeah, yeah, because that was, I mean, all this discussion about the league right now and how it's shifting to being more wing-oriented, he is about as big a wing as you can get.
And don't you think that's almost all about, not all about, but Durant has so much to do with that. But also LeBron. I mean, you're talking about big guys doing little guy jobs.
Well, and it's all over the place. Anthony Davis does it. Carl Towns does it. The foreign-born guys and Antetokounmpo and Porzingis both do it. So that mold, the NBA, those are the superstars of the league. Those are the next round of superstars, the guys that we just talked about there. And that's what they are. So if you were building a star, like if you built a player in an NBA video game, you would build Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah.
You just make his back more healthy. So he probably has the highest ceiling, and it isn't particularly close, but when you factor in the risk of injury, would you be more willing to take another guy? And then the second guy on most of the mock drafts that I checked the day before the draft, Colin Sexton was the second SEC player taken, which isn't surprising considering how hard he plays, how well he played at Alabama.
He's explosive.
But there are some critiques. He kind of had a ball dominance where he probably wouldn't be a great point guard on most NBA teams because he dribbled way too much. But, you know, that's...
I can change that.
Exactly. That's the thing. You're trying to project all these guys, right. So this is what makes it so difficult to look at this. And then after that, the way I was looking at the rankings, and this is obviously where it's interesting to Kentucky, Gilgeous Alexander and Kevin Knox went back and forth in the four or five mock drafts.
Right, flipping and flopping.
Knox would be 9, Gilgeous Alexander would be 11, Gilgeous Alexander was 6, as I mentioned, 1, and I saw Knox. I think the lowest we've talked about it was 14. Neither of them slipped past 14, so I think that's lottery, I believe, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. So they're both going to be lottery picks. But which one do you like more?
Well, it obviously depends on what you need.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like the NFL, in my opinion, and I'm by no means an expert, but NFL, oftentimes, they can look up and say, best athlete available, and certainly not like baseball, where you're drafting with an eye on 5 years down the road. Mm-hmm. You need someone to help you tomorrow or yesterday.
Yeah.
So you need a need filled now. And that's why I think, and again, you know, you dislike the mock drafts, but a lot of people base their projections on who needs what. You know, you need a point guard, but what kind of point guard? And the other thing, too, is which franchise? You know, we talked a lot about the Knicks, and Sexton seems to be attached to them, but now you see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, his name. Oh, they need a point guard. And keep in mind, Malik Monk was a lock for the Knicks yeah. and ends up in Charlotte. But there are people who will say the Knicks are the worst-run franchise in all of professional sports. I don't happen to believe that, but it's among the worst.
Yeah.
You know, and so just because a team needs a certain person, that doesn't mean, or see a type of player, that doesn't mean they're going to project,
you know what,
to a great NBA career.
You know what the Knicks do that I think might hurt them to a certain extent, and they, with the superstar they currently have, they didn't do it, Porzingis. They try to project who New York fans will love. They try to get these.
They got to sell tickets.
I completely understand, but winning sells more tickets than anything.
No question.
So,
and New York fans, by the way, hated that pick.
Oh, I know.
Hated it.
That's what I'm saying.
And now he gets hurt and like, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Exactly. So you know. That was you talk about Sexton in New York. That's part of the argument
yeah.
for him to go there because he's going to play so hard. He's going to play so gritty. He's going to lay it all out every night. New York fans will eat it up, which is awesome and is great.
As long as you win.
But but if there's a better player who maybe isn't, and I always – it's tough to judge effort in a lot of these guys because some players just make it look easier
yeah.
than other guys,
yeah.
you know? And for a smaller guard, you can see him playing tougher because he's going to be matched up against a big guy. Like, it's tough to kind of judge Anthony Davis playing really hard in a game when, you know, he might just be beat on. Him just taking punishment from in the post, you know, that's
takes he has to wait on the ball.
Exactly, and it's maximum effort. So
yeah. Let me interject here. Two things with Kentucky spin on it. Sexton was this ball of energy guy, right? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was a different kind of player. So when you look at the two, you're like, okay, well, who's expending more effort?
Yeah.
Well, Sexton, but was it efficient? Was it as efficient at SGA? Because Gilgeous-Alexander made it look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had just more of a subtlety to his game. Doesn't mean he wasn't playing hard, you know. And the effort comes in the hours and hours leading up to the game. Not that Sexton didn't work on his game either, but we knew Gilgeous-Alexander did. But what was interesting was the way you described Sexton and maybe winning over New York fans, you described Kenny Walker. And that's why they loved him until he hurt his back. You know, he wasn't quite as effective a player. The team started to struggle. Well, now they were booing him. But his career, believe it or not, was resurrected by Rick Pitino, who put in that full court pressure, and now that was perfect for Kenny getting out on the break, throwing down dunks. My point being, not only which team, but which system are you playing?
Yeah.
How well do they fit that system?
Well, and that's the other thing that factors into all this. And probably should mention real quick before we move on to that, Robert Williams is the last guy, SEC guy, that's going to be drafted in the first round from Texas A&M.
You think so?
Yeah, he's going to be drafted.
No. You think he'll be the last guy?
I mean,
the last guy you're mentioning.
In my list.
Gotcha.
But yes, probably, most likely,
yeah.
if you kind of just look at the numbers and what people think, because he seems to have the opposite rep of Sexton,
yes.
where Sexton is going to get every ounce he has out of his physical ability. Robert Williams has all the physical ability in the world, but, you know, effort.
Is he going to show up?
Yeah, and those kind of things. And you saw that certain nights at A&M.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing, and as we talked about. System, we've talked about it a lot leading up to the draft. System in college, he was in a terrible system to kind of put on NBA display because he was in basically a three power forward lineup with Hogue, Tyler Davis, and himself. And they were the three best players on the team. And as you mentioned with Anthony Davis, all those guys got to wait to get the ball unless they go get an offensive rebound.
Right.
And so when you kind of just take that out, and if you can, it's always tough to factor all these things together. So how he projects is really interesting. Some people really, really love him, and if he gets in the right system, which is kind of the X factor that all these guys' career will be so impactful. They don't have control, you know, being in bad spots. I mean, you look at De'Aaron Fox. In theory, if you flip-flop and this isn't fair, but I'm going to do it anyway, flip-flop De'Aaron Fox and Donovan Mitchell. Is De'Aaron Fox the rookie of the year? I don't, probably not, because Donovan Mitchell had a better shooting touch in those kind of deals. But it's just, there's so much luck that goes into an NBA career to start right. off.
Sacramento may not have needed Mitchell to do the kinds of things he did in Utah, and so, vice versa.
So we lay that all out. Who do you think is going to be the best NBA player out of this SEC crop?
Wow. Again, it just depends. All right, are we assuming that each guy, let's do that for the sake of being fair. Each guy goes to the right team and the right system.
Yeah, everything. We'll assume good health and solid system, not like that.
I would say Porter, for the reasons you mentioned. You know, he has the skill set and the size, and assuming he stays healthy, I just think he has the most physical gifts, you know. And he also has the kind of game where he could be the leading scorer, you know, as our friend Darren Horn used to tell us before he got back into coaching. In the league, you're either a scorer or a role player, you know. And how many of those guys we just talked about would be the scoring guy on their respective NBA team versus the role player? Well, the point guards are probably going to be role players. Mm-hmm. Vital. Robert Williams, I'm with you. I think he's got skills, but doesn't have the motor. Knox could be.
I think Knox is.
I think he definitely could. He's almost going to have to be.
He's the second most likely guy to be a leading scorer on the team from this crop.
Not right away, but yes. But so I think Porter could be, have the earliest impact to that end. What do you think?
Yeah, as long as he's healthy, I think that's accurate. And I think that, you know, Michael Porter Jr. has the most talent, the most skill set, everything going for him. As long as he stays healthy, he's going to have an amazing NBA career. But what's interesting is once you get past him, and if you factor out his health and make it a positive for him, make it that all works out, the second best player, I feel like, is a total toss-up.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of crazy, you know, that we see these guys all year, and you still really have no idea of who's going to be the best out of Gilgeous Alexander, Kevin Knox, or Colin Sexton. And you could make an argument, if you really wanted to, and it wouldn't be too much of a stretch, that in the current NBA model, Robert Williams is exactly what elite teams are trying to get. You look at DeAndre Jordan, his impact on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
For Houston, they have Clint Capella. All he does is like block shots, rim run. Robert Williams is very capable of doing all those things. If he got into a perfect situation, he could be one of the more impactful guys in the NBA. It's just got to be in the right system and putting in the effort. So if I'm after Michael Porter, we'll kind of do this back and forth. I'll take the number two guy, and in my little list, it probably is a little homerism and being close to it, but Gilgeous Alexander just seemed like he could do everything. And the one thing that I find interesting that people often talk about when they kind of do the mock stuff, when they project guys, they look at free throw percentages because that kind of shows you what kind of shooter. They do it more with big guys than little guys because most times little guys shoot enough to where you get a thing.
Right.
And while scouts don't love Gilgeous Alexander's shot, it's a little bit long and I guess a little bit of a set shot, as most people know when you watched him. He makes it. Makes his free throws. That's vitally important for a point guard.
Right.
So him being able to do that kind of puts him over the top for me, and plus his length.
Oh, yeah.
So I just think...
And he can guard.
Yeah, that's exactly... He can guard multiple positions.
And doesn't mind it. I mean, likes it.
And that's a key in the modern NBA, trying to switch on guys. He can guard most of those positions. So I think he's going to have the second most successful NBA career.
All right, then I will tell you, as we draft here, I will take Sexton. And I remember when I first watched him, and I'd heard so much about him, and started watching him on TV, and I thought, man, this guy can play. And I also remember thinking, how lucky is he to have a former NBA point guard and head coach as his coach at Alabama, and Avery Johnson. And you're right, he over-dribbled. But, you know, maybe that's what Alabama needed at that point. I thought Alabama would have a more successful season. They had their ups and downs. But I do think if this kid is smart and is in, again, and we're stipulating that he's in the right situation, right? I think he can mold his game into what they need. He has the physical tools and skills, I think, to be a big-time NBA point guard.
He almost had his team come back when they were 4-on-5. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
That was a crazy, crazy game.
Yeah.
So that leaves Robert Williams and Kevin Knox, and I'm going to take Kevin Knox because he just has all those tools. And if he can put it all together, he's, as we mentioned with Porter, prototypical kind of wing big guy.
Yeah.
I am interested to see if he can actually play the four spot. I don't know if he has the mentality and physicality yet, but projecting forward, I think he can grow into that, and then he's going to be a solid NBA starter.
Well, to me, the biggest question is, can he guard?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a guy like that, once he gets in the league, I think, and works every day at being a professional basketball player, I'm not worried about his offense.
No.
But can he avoid it early on being a liability on the floor defensively? And, you know, they look at the plus-minus thing, and as long as he's guarding, they don't have to worry about that so much. I think, though, it'll take – he'll be in the second contract when he really starts to show it, I think. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more of the Big Blue Insider, 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider final segment of our program. Mark Berger will be in with Curtis tomorrow night, as I'll be involved in more doings with the Children's Charity Golf Tournament. And don't forget our coverage from 3 to 6 on Saturday afternoon from a couple of golf courses. So we hope you can join us for that. Or come on out to one of the golf courses and meet some of the celebrities. And one thing we wanted to touch on, we didn't have a chance to talk about it yesterday, but the story broke online and now it's in the newspaper. But Landon Foster, with a bit of a surprising revelation when he came out basically and said he was gay and talked about how that affected him and his life as a college football player. And, you know, we've made strides as a society in athletics. I have been pleasantly surprised at the reaction with several people coming out. Mm-hmm. In athletics. And it just, again, proves that we've made progress as a society because, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, not so much. But that's why people stay quiet.
Yeah.
But I never think about that kind of stuff. So, you know, a couple of people said, were you surprised? Well, you know, yeah, yes and no. I never think about it. So it's just like, how about that?
Yeah, immediately what I did was I kind of went back and just watched the interviews. Not like I was looking for anything along those lines. Just to kind of remind myself, like, hey, what was it like when I was talking to Landon Foster? And you just kind of remember how kind of awesome he was. He did all the charity work. He was involved in the Special Olympics. And I actually tweeted out a video interview we did with him when he was still playing. And he discussed how he found community service.
Yeah.
And if you remember, he went on the Ethiopia trip through UK football.
Yep.
Jen Smith wrote the article about how he bonded with a kid who was living on the street there who eventually came to the United States via a foster family, and then came to a UK game. So he was really heavily involved in all that stuff. So kind of just reminded me how great and awesome he was. I did have Kyle Tucker tweeted out a comment from Mark Stoops, and he said, Landon was a model student athlete when he was here. He was a great student and gave us everything he had on the field. I support Landon the same way I support all our players and want him to be happy and successful. And that was kind of his message in his post. He wanted to be him.
Yeah.
And this was a step in that.
And I think that's a nice comment from Stoops, and I think most UK fans would agree with that. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Big Blue Insider. Again, Mark Berger in tomorrow night with Curtis. Thank you so much for your calls, your tweets, your comments. For Curtis, Dick Gabriel. That's it. Good night from Lexington.